Welcome to Sex with Simmery. Frank, occasionally explicit edutainment on the most important topic of all. Sex with Simmery is not intended for children and is not safe for work unless your boss is particularly awesome. See more at sexwithsimmery.com. Welcome to Sex with Simmery. This is Dr. Simmery, and today we are talking about herpes. Yeah, okay, so I'm going to just get it out there. I'm going to say it in that creepy way. Herpes. We are talking about herpes today. And the reason we're talking about it is actually based on a reader question. So I've actually gotten multiple emails about this in the last couple months, and I tend to just reply to the individuals. But considering that it's been more than one person, it seems like maybe all of us would benefit from taking a quick refresher on our herpes information situation. So welcome to your quick podcast of herpes workshop. That sounds like, woo, yeah, party. All right, so I've gotten several reader questions. Some are written by people who have started dating someone and they're interested, and then the person that they're dating revealed that they have some form of herpes, the simplex virus. And the person who wrote the question was just curious about, all right, so I'm interested in this person and I want to make this work. I mean, what sort of risk am I putting myself at, and what can I do to minimize the danger of transmission? And similarly, I've also gotten a couple reader questions from people who are like, well, this is the story. And it's always something that they didn't see coming. It was always somebody that didn't know that they had herpes and they transmitted it, or it was some person who just didn't share the information but might have known. So now the situation is they know that they have herpes and they want to know, what do I do from here? How do I tell people that I'm dating? And what do I do to reduce the terrible amount of painful outbreaks? And questions like that. And so we're just going to do like an overall tutorial on herpes transmission, on the different types of it, and what you can do to protect yourself. Now, the important thing before you're like, this doesn't apply to me, is that odds are pretty good it applies to you. Whether you personally are at risk for transmission, you know somebody who is, and you need to know this information so you could share it with them. And why? Why? Because 18 to 20% of adults have herpes. 18 to 20%, that's one in five. Now, it differs from group to group. Like, some populations are more likely to come across it than others. But the average number of sexual partners of people who are positive for herpes is three to four partners. So just because you haven't been going to as many orgies anymore, or never did, does not mean that you are not at risk. The other interesting thing is that of the people who have it, up to 90% don't get diagnosed. I'm gonna let you think about that one more time. So up to 90% of people who have either herpes 1 or 2 don't know it. And what? Why is that? So part of why is why we need to go back to this basic herpes tutorial. So we're going to talk about what it is and how it gets transmitted so that we can talk about these more complex things, so like telling your partner about it. So there's herpes simplex virus 1, which we more commonly know in its oral form, so cold sores and that sort of thing. Cold sores are, for the most part, 98% of the time, evidence of herpes simplex virus 1. 2, herpes simplex virus 2, is more commonly known on the genital region, and it can spread to the anus, but we're talking like upstairs, downstairs, that's the major difference. However, they can be spread to the other. So let's say you have a cold sore, and you're like, all right, so I'm going to go down on my partner now. And it could very easily become genital herpes for them. So just because they are different types does not mean that they can't go mixy-matchy. So one can become the other, just to be aware of that. The other major difference between the two of them is that the genital type of herpes sheds the virus even when you're not symptomatic. They both actually can. So what am I talking about there? The way that herpes is spread is by viral shedding. Herpes is an infection of the sensory area. And that's why it's so painful. It's spread along the nerves. And so it can spread from one part to another along those nerves. And the virus is shedding. So if you come in skin to skin contact, an uninfected person and an infected person, that's how it's transmitted. So as opposed to being like blood or semen or vaginal secretions, like we talk about with HIV prevention, this is about skin to skin contact. So even if you never actually like put something in somebody else, but you just like played rub up against each other, yeah, you're still at risk. So that's an important thing to know. And among herpes simplex virus 2, which is the genital one, you can be shedding that virus even if you're not having an outbreak. And so that makes it a little bit more risky, which is why it's actually a felony if you know that you have type 2 and you don't tell your partners. So that's another thing to be aware of. And I'm already getting to the scary stuff. So let me just remind you again, this is a fairly common thing, and that doesn't make it okay, but we all do need to take a breath and not freak out. I don't want you to freak out in the midst of this. I want you to be concerned, but I don't want you to become so filled by anxiety that you don't remember any of these details. So right now I'd like you to stop and be like, okay, all right, we're taking it in, it's fine. Important things to know about transmission. So we've talked about this viral shedding, and it can be spread by skin to skin contact, which means that even if you use a condom, you're not necessarily safe. Condom use, if consistently used correctly, that you put on a condom before you have intercourse, just because the genitals are going to be coming anywhere near a mouth or another genital or an anus, that you will reduce the risk by up to 50%. Condoms can make a significant dent in the likelihood of transmission. The other thing that can be a huge factor in reducing transmission is if the infected partner takes suppressive therapy, and on a regular basis, on a daily basis. You've probably seen the commercials for Valtrex. There are other medications. That one's known, that particular, that's a brand name, but that particular type that reduces viral shedding can reduce your risk of transmission also dramatically, somewhere around 50% also. So while 50% and 50% in this case do not add up to 100%, they are pretty good together. So it's not like condoms cover half and then the prescription covers the other half. It's just that you have 50% on top of 50%, which just is like making sure that there's not a drunk driver and also a driver on heroin. You're still not 100% safe in a car, but you're definitely safer than if both of the drivers are messed up. Make sense? Okay, hopefully. Yay. All right. So we can know also that herpes can be spread even if you're on the suppressive treatment, but it does dramatically reduce your risk. For many years, what doctors would tell people after their diagnosis is that as long as you don't have an outbreak, you're fine. So don't have sex during an outbreak, but if you're asymptomatic, if you're not having the painful blisters and that sort of thing, then your partner's at risk. That's what they used to say. That's what they used to say. But we know better now. We know, in fact, that you can shed even if you're not having an outbreak. And outbreaks, this is very important, look very different than you might suspect. So sometimes it's big, painful blisters. And those are the sort of things that if they showed you pictures of herpes in your sex ed class, they probably went for those really like big, scary looking lesions that would be really identifiable. And we were all sitting there being like, well, why would you not notice that? And why would you like not care about that happening? And part of that was that, you know, they were trying to scare you, like, don't have sex because this could happen to you. But then it also gives us this false impression that this is what a herpes outbreak looks like. And they don't give you the impression that that little cut, that little tiny lesion, that little bit of trauma on the vulva or on the shaft, that little tiny thing, that could be an outbreak. So if you look down and you're like, why do I have a cut? And you don't remember cutting yourself. That actually could be something that you need to pay closer attention to, and you might want to consider checking that out with a doctor. In fact, I mean, I would like to recommend people get screened in general, even if you don't think that you have reason to be concerned. So these outbreaks, some people can see them coming ahead of time, not see them coming, but feel them coming. Because again, the virus lives in the nerves. And so you may start to feel it perhaps in your spine beforehand, and you can feel it moving along the track of your nerves before the outbreak. It's possible, but that's not everybody. And outbreaks, again, can look quite different on different people. And many people also don't have outbreaks. That's the really interesting thing, is that many people go undiagnosed, like I said, up to 90% possibly, don't get the diagnosis because they don't know to go get tested. The symptoms don't look like they expected to, or they don't have any symptoms at all. One of the many times that people find out that they have herpes, and they had had it for many years but didn't know it, is when their body goes through a great deal of trauma, and then suddenly an outbreak will occur, or they just happen to get blood work done. So for instance, pregnant women are often, not often, but that may be the time that a woman finds out about a herpes virus that she's had for many years and didn't realize. So the trauma and changes of going through pregnancy elicited symptoms for the first time, or just having blood work done is how they discover it. And that's important to know. Pregnancy and herpes they aren't good friends. They're not good friends at all. Aside from the fact that an outbreak would make delivery by vagina a very bad idea, it can possibly lead to blindness in the child. Herpes that's caught while pregnant, if a woman becomes infected with herpes while pregnant, it actually can lead to some fatal infections for the fetus. So this is not a thing you want to mess around with. So pregnant women will go in for their checkups and possibly have blood work done, or possibly just be having this rash, or what they're not really sure is happening but is an outbreak that they want to get checked out by the doctor. And that's the first time they find out. And they came into contact with the virus many, many, many years earlier, but just were unaware because they weren't having what they understood to be an outbreak. And so again, this is why it is important for you to realize your risk and be aware of the actual realities of herpes, rather than just the most outrageous, outlandish, extreme variations. And again, the sex ed videos when we were kids, if they showed you herpes, because some of us didn't get any pictures at all, those are not necessarily the most representative. And we also need to discuss the role of oral sex here. So I mentioned a little bit before about how herpes 1 and herpes 2 are separate, but one can become the other if you have oral sex. And oral sex is estimated to account for 50% of the new herpes type 1 infections. And of those infections, you're going to find that a lot of people, again, don't fully know what's happening because the lesions in their mouth don't necessarily look like any big deal. Or there's a lot of people who will say misleading information like, yeah, but chickenpox is the same as herpes. And so cold sores doesn't mean that you have herpes. It means that you had chickenpox at some point. Or we all have herpes in us because we all had chickenpox and things of that nature, which is like kind of true because they're all technically of the same strain. But chickenpox and shingles are not the same as herpes 1. And so don't get deluded and think that you aren't at risk or that you're not, you know, actually carrying it when you might be. So these are things to be concerned about. And again, so the point of that little chat was to talk about oral sex is not without risk. All right, so I've thrown a whole lot at you about transmission. What do you do about screening? Because some folks are like, I had a health screening. Like, I asked to be tested for everything, and I came back clear so that I'm good, right? Like, or how could this have happened, or whatever the case may be. Tested for everything is not actual nomenclature that a doctor is going to be able to read your mind. So if you want a herpes screening, you need to ask for a herpes screening, and that's done by a blood test. If you didn't have a blood test, there's not even any possible way that you could have a diagnosis. And just as a side note, you're likely not going to be getting tested for HPV either. If you go in and say, test me for everything, HPV is probably not going to be something you're screened for either. HPV is usually only picked up on women when they go in for a pap smear, and only then if they have abnormal cell growth. There's not currently an HPV test for men that is usually performed. So if a guy goes in and says, I want to get screened for everything, that doesn't mean you got screened for HPV. And again, for a herpes screening, you need a blood draw. So if there was no blood draw, if you just peed in a cup or you had a swab of something, you didn't get tested for herpes. So you want to ask for that. Also related to herpes is concern for HIV. The two have a degree of synergy together. If you have one, it opens you up to susceptibility to the other. For obvious reasons, if you have a lesion or a cut or some kind of opening, it's much easier for HIV to enter the body because HIV is transmitted by blood and semen and vaginal secretions, as you hopefully already know. And we've discussed how oral sex is not necessarily the easiest way to transmit HIV unless you've done something recently like floss your teeth, in which case you might have some abrasions in your mouth. You have openings in which your blood might mix with the secretions of your partner. And that's how oral sex can be risky for HIV. But if you have herpes, you might have lesions, you might have abrasions, you might have cuts, and you may not even be aware of it because they might be so small that you've ignored them. But again, this just increases your susceptibility. And vice versa, if you have HIV, you are more susceptible to herpes. Your immune system is a little bit compromised. Plus, the two tend to go together. So people who are HIV positive are just more likely to pick up on herpes that they come in contact with. So it is very important that if you already know your status on one, that you take extra precautions so that you don't necessarily have to deal with both. So now that we've discussed a little bit about the transmission and the prevention and those sort of things, what can we do in actual logistical terms? Like, what does this mean in real life? So while a person who just found out about their diagnosis doesn't necessarily mean that they have recently been infected. The recently infected are the most likely to spread herpes to someone else. So what is that again? The recently infected, the people who have just come in contact with it and become herpes carriers themselves, those people are shedding the virus the most and are most likely to transmit it to other people. But again, just because a diagnosis happened recently does not mean that the infection happened recently. As we've already discussed, people can have herpes for many years and be unaware of it. So a recent diagnosis is not the same thing as a recent infection. So just be aware of that. But the people who are at most risk of transmitting it to other people are those who were recently infected. So just take that into consideration. That might mean that if you were recently infected, you know for a fact when it happened, then you might want to take a little vacay from all the doing it. Just for a little bit. In terms of when couples are most likely to transmit it to each other, it's most common to happen in the first 2 months of a sexual relationship. It's more likely to happen early rather than later. People who've had it for longer evidently do less viral shedding. So just over the course of time, it actually will get better. That's also in terms of outbreaks as well. Outbreaks are most likely to happen in the first year of infection and then reduce down after that. So while I did discuss earlier that some people don't have outbreaks until later, that's usually brought on by some kind of trauma. So outbreaks are very painful and they might be more frequent at the beginning and then it might settle down. And also it's a greater time of risk of spreading to other people. So that's a thing to be aware of. So this, of course, brings us to the actual reader questions. Let's say you or your partner has found out that you carry herpes. What are you going to do now? How are you going to have this conversation? What are you going to do going forward? So let's say you just found out about your infection. What are you going to do? How are you going to talk to your partners? Well, if you have an existing partner or partners, you want to tell them. You really need to tell them because it's not inevitable that they have it. It's very possible that you have dodged that particular bullet, and it's possible to take the steps from here on out to prevent them becoming infected. if you don't have an existing partner but are just getting back into dating or just about to go out there and hook up with somebody, you do need to tell them. Again, I mentioned it earlier, but to not reveal one's herpes simplex virus 2 status is actually a felony. So you want to tell them. It's also just because you're a nice person and you want to make sure that other people have the full information before they make their decisions, because you're just responsible and that's how you do. So how are you going to have this conversation? You can delay it as long as you want to, but eventually you want to have some kind of conversation. So bring it up in a way that is not a terribly charged moment anyhow. You don't want to be in the heat of the moment. You don't want to be right about to get it on and put things in holes and touching and licking and things like that. That's not a good time to bring it up, because that's going to be like, whoa, okay, now we got to bring it all the way back and we got to take it back to a place where I feel like you let me go a lot further than I necessarily wanted to. So you want to have this conversation in the sober light of day, or sober-ish time of day, whatever time of day you want. But you want to control the conversation and keep it into a purely calm talk. And the person who brings it up is the one that sets the tone. Now, if somebody reacts poorly to it, they react poorly to it, but a lot can be done by setting a calm, grown-up tone and not being whiny about it and not being like cryy about it. If you break the news to somebody in a way that is like, oh my God, and then they feel like they have to comfort you and they feel like it's this terrible traumatic thing and you're really upset about it, like, it changes the tone of it. It makes them feel like they need to be traumatic and dramatic about it also. But if you just have a adult conversation where you're like, all right, so here's the situation, this is what I know about it, and you come armed with facts and you say, this is what we can do about it, you are going to give them options. They can choose to be dramatic, but they now also have the very clearly laid out path of being a grown-up about it and sitting and listening and learning. You want to give them the option to go do their own research before they have to make the next decision about being sexually active. So you want to have this conversation at a time where you don't expect to immediately go home and have sex. You want to give them a little bit of air, a little bit of room around them so they can wrap their head around it. Because for some folks, that's all they need. It's just a little bit of time to go do some research, find out that it's not a death sentence, that it's not something that they need to consider a deal breaker. Just give people that moment to be a grown-up about it. So doing it on a random afternoon before you're going to go do something else besides getting it on. And again, the tone. The tone matters a ton. So you want to bring it up before you're sexually active, and after you've already built up a fair amount of rapport. Like, you don't necessarily want to bring it up on a first date because you don't know that much about each other. The exception, of course, is that if you are interested in it, there are lots of dating sites that are for people who already know that they have some STI, either HIV, herpes, etc. And if you use one of these dating sites, you can just go on your date and know that it's already out there. It's already in the open. Everybody knows what's up. And you can talk about it freely on the first date and then just have it be out of the way. So that would be an exception. But otherwise, I do suggest actually letting a little bit of a rapport build up, because a lot of folks actually find out that, like, oh, I actually really do like this person and it is worth it to me to take this risk, because sex with anybody is risky. And this person was honest with me. This person was brave and came right out and said what was going on. And I actually, when I think about it, I really respect that. And I appreciate that they, you know, took that and gave me the choice that maybe somebody else didn't give them. So it's not necessarily a death sentence to your dating life either. So just to keep you reassured that you should be honest and upfront with people. And then on the other end of the spectrum, we have the people who just found out that the person they're interested in has some form of herpes. So what do you do now? Somebody just told you this and you might have all sorts of flights of fancy in your head. Hopefully, since you've listened this far, you have enough information, you're armed with a little bit more, so that you know that it doesn't necessarily have to be a complete deal breaker and a totally scary situation. That it is possible to have a sexual relationship with somebody who has herpes without transmission occurring to the non-infected partner.
totally possible. So here are your options as the not infected person. Again, go arm yourself, go look up information from reliable sources. There are some great sources of information. There's a regular feature in the New York Times from a herpes expert that I suggest you look into, as opposed to looking on some Yahoo Answers forum, obviously. So arm yourself with a little bit more information, and definitely suggest to your potential partner or current partner that they go on suppressive therapy. Find out if they are, suggest that they do if they're not already. Definitely invest in a fair amount of protective barriers like condoms and dental dams, so that you can make use of those and that they're regularly available to you no matter where you're going. And consider for yourself like what you want to do. And if you can't get over it, you can't get over it. And don't force yourself to do anything that you really don't want to do. But consider the very real numbers game that, again, 18 to 20% of adults have herpes. This person happened to know about it and tell you about it. They did you a solid. They did you a real solid there. A lot of folks don't bother to get tested because they would rather live in denial and they would rather not know. They would rather not know for certain because then they have plausible deniability. And this partner who just told you the truth didn't take that way out. They were honest with you and they respect you enough to tell you the reality that again, somebody may not have done that same for them. Somebody may have lied to them or just kept them in the dark intentionally. So consider the very true evidence of character that is demonstrating. So things to consider when you're trying to figure out who you want to form a long-term relationship with or just be sexual with. So let's do a recap of what we've discussed today. So first of all, we did a little bit of consciousness raising about the actual incidence of herpes in the adult population. It's higher than a lot of us expected. And the somewhat scary thing is that many people don't know. That makes it worrisome because people are making uninformed decisions. They're making choices about sexuality without having all the information. People are having sex with someone thinking that they're clean or thinking that they're uninfected, when the reality is they never got the real information because they didn't get a blood test. You need a blood test. I don't know if I emphasize that enough. You need a blood test. So we discussed that. We talked about the different types. There's herpes 1 and herpes 2, which are oral and genital, respectively. They can both be transmitted even if there's no outbreak, genital 1 especially. To a greater degree, the genital herpes is more likely to be shedding virus even if there's no outbreak. We also discussed how outbreaks don't necessarily look like you might think they look. So if you have some suspicions, don't just sit there and wonder about it. Maybe go find out because, as we also discussed, you have options. There are suppressive treatments that you can take every day that will not only reduce the risk of those terribly painful outbreaks so you don't have to deal with that, but also reduce the risk of spreading it to somebody else so they don't have to deal with it either. On top of that, condoms can be up to 50% effective at reducing the risk of transmission during intercourse. So you have those options. So be honest with people, including yourself, and reduce your risk with more information. Actually finding out the reality and rather than being guided by fear and denial. So today was just a little bit about awareness raising. And so the take home message is sex is not without risk. We know this. This is part of why it's appealing, is that it's risky. We put ourselves in a state of vulnerability to another person in a variety of ways, not the least of which is physically, emotionally. But sometimes those risks can be managed. And if we have all the information, we can manage them to the best of our ability. And we can live long, healthy lives with or without a herpes infection. So thank you so much for listening in today. And be good to each other out there. Thanks. Thank you for listening to Sex with Timory. Please check out more from sexwithtimory.com, where Monday through Friday there's new content, including polls, weekly sex columns, and Friday sex links. And if you have any questions, comments, or violent reactions, please email them to sexwithtimory@gmail.com. That's sexwithtimare@gmail.com. And thank you.